Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us today for this important meeting where we're going to talk with Eric Johnson about, he'll take care of that. Eric Johnson about our budget. He's going to lead us through a conversation about our budget. And those of us who are in the room have these cards so that Eric can know who we are. But if you are online, for example, Sheriff Rick Felici and Auditor Sheila Kreider, Clerk Deborah Van Pelt, if you're at Commissioner Janet St. Clair, if you are a commissioner or another elected official or a department head and you are online, can you raise your hand or put a star or something so that Eric can know when he sees you that you are one of the elected officials or appointed department heads?
Commissioner Bacon, if you could ask the host to enable our video, so if we want to turn on our cameras, that would be possible. Thank you. I think they read my mind.
Yeah. We'll see how that goes, Commissioner. We have our issues that happen sometimes when we have video enabled. In district court, we have either a judge or a district court commissioner is over there. So anyway, I appreciate everyone joining us here today. And I don't have in front of me, Eric, a whole story about you, and I apologize.
Oh, there's a whole story, but we'll leave that out.
So Eric was with the Washington State Association of Counties, and now he and Josh Weiss are together our lobbyists at the state, and so you could tell the story. Right?
Yep.
That's kind of sort of the story.
That's kind of the story.
Sure.
Yep.
All right.
If you want to go around real quick here, that'd be great. So, Sean?
Yeah, Sean Morris, Public Health Director.
Susan Geiger, Budget and Risk Director.
Jill Johnson, Commissioner.
Efren Reed, Human Resources and General Services Administration Director.
Jonathan Lang, Planning and Community Development Director.
Greg Banks, Prosecuting Attorney.
Fred Smotterly, Public Works Director.
Chantel Porter, Coroner.
Tony Lamb, Treasurer.
Kelly Mock, Assessor.
Dean Lamborn, IT Director.
Linda Austin, Human Services Director.
And then online we have
Janet St. Clair, Island County Commissioner.
Sheriff?
Rick Felici, Island County Sheriff.
Sheila?
Sheila Kreider, Island County Auditor.
Judge Kostick? Can we unmute Judge Kostick or Deborah Van Pelt? Anyway, Judge Kostick is with District Court and Deborah Van Pelt is the elected court clerk here for Superior Court. I don't think there's anyone else there who's an elected court clerk. Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks. Well, thank you for the chance to be here in Island County. Just to highlight a little bit, Beck, I hate to do the math because I know someone in this room is going to say I wasn't even born yet. I started in county government in 1984, so there's a chance that could be someone in this room. Nope. Okay, I feel better. Not sure.
Sean
and Jonathan.
Usually there is. You know, when I would tell my staff that I would, been a long time anyway. So it's now into the fifth decade, so it's been a while. I had a brief period of time where I was not in county government. When I was a staff member, then I went to a state agency for about a decade or so. And then I came back as a Lewis County Commissioner. And then I was at the Association of Counties for almost 20 years. So quite a while, where I got to know a number of folks. I spent a lot of time with the Prosecutor and Attorney Association in particular. So it's great to be back. I left there about a year ago and started an interim gig as a Franklin County interim administrator for a period of time before I formed a partnership with a former colleague of mine, Josh Weiss, who was my legislative director when I was at the Association of Counties for, almost a decade or so. So Josh and I have started a firm. So it's great to be here. I am trying to focus less on, frankly, lobbying and more on helping counties do certain projects, certain activities, and just doing facilitation and work like that. So that's more my area of the business, but certainly assisting Josh in advocacy as well. So a little bit about me. The We have three kind of sectors of today's hour and a half. Susan's going to kind of give you a quick update on the status and the process of the Island County budget. And then I'm going to talk about for about 30 minutes about kind of the overview of county budgeting in general across the state of Washington and what's happening and the challenges that counties are facing in what we'll call a structural deficit. We'll spend some time talking about that. Some of those big drivers that affect county budgets across the state. And they are exacerbated in certain counties more than others, but we'll talk a little bit about that. And then one of the things that the commissioners asked me to focus in on was how do we improve communication through the process, both with department heads, with elected officials, and ultimately with the interaction with the board and all of you as well. And so we're going to do a couple exercises on that. We'll talk about that towards the end. So that's in a nutshell what we're going to do in the next whatever we have in an hour and 25 minutes. So I'll turn it over to Susan. Susan will go, and then we'll come back to me.
So I just have a couple of things to go over with you with the current budget process. As you know, all budgets have been submitted to put together the pro forma budget, so the draft budget, the proposed budget. Detailed department budgets have been provided to the commissioners as well as the departments. So when you come forward to do your presentations, with the exception of Public Works, we're working on that one. Yours is about 80 pages, so yeah. It takes a little bit longer to do that one. But all of the other budget packets, anything that's in the budget book that either you've submitted or has been compiled by the budget office through ClearGov has been scanned and sent to you so that you have the same information that the board is looking at during your budget work session. We began budget work sessions last week, and we'll be going through August with regularly scheduled work sessions on the budget. The budget work session, the most up-to-date budget work session schedule, is on a link at the bottom of each one of the agendas for the budget work session. So if you go to the regular and special sessions, you'll see budget work session agendas there, and there's a link to the most up-to-date schedule there. And sometimes things do get rearranged there. The process to get that rearranged generally is we bring that forward to the commissioners and then we rearrange the schedule because their schedules are very busy too. So we don't want to overlap on other things. So we did determine a process for that as well. Currently the budget, proposed budget has $124.8 million in revenues and $135.7 million in expenditures. So what that means is we will be spending some fund balance if we don't find a way to work through the budget process where we're either locating revenues that aren't in the budget or we're confirming there are no cuts that we can make in the budget. So that's all part of the budget work session process. It's also part of you receiving your budgets and reviewing them to make sure that they seem accurate. Each time I send out a schedule, I'll either get a phone call or I'll get looks good. That's really helpful. If I get a phone call or an email, it gives me an opportunity to fix it before you go to work session. So that's really helpful if you can make sure you're doing that. Personnel costs, to the best of our ability, have either been included or a placeholder has been put in the budget for the proposed budget. The healthcare costs, again, are going to be increasing. The HRA is projected to increase by about 5.38%. HSA plan will increase by 9.11%. And these are well beyond the increases that we see in revenue, which makes it even more challenging. Salaries, benefits, and wages take up the lion's share of county budgets. In particular, in current expense, it's 75.8% of the expenditures in that fund. Overall, in all funds, it's 41.4%. But many of those funds don't have personnel in them. They're capital funds, or they're funding that goes out to other agencies. So that's why that difference seems so dramatic. So that's the current status of where we are with the budget. We're right in the middle of it. And so we're just going to continue to work through it.
If there's questions for Susan before I kind of forge in, and I really appreciate Susan's kind of help. We chatted in advance, and some of the numbers that she's shared with you, all right, are going to be further illustrated in what we see on a statewide basis and some of the cost drivers in particular. So I'm going to share my screen. Can you hear me online? I don't have a mic really close, so okay. It's like we're all okay. And now to see if I can do this correctly. Was taking a little while to load. All right, so again, we're going to kind of go through three sections. And you do have a PowerPoint, you have a printed view of this, and I don't think I made any changes. And I've probably driven Megan up a tree with sending her like three or four updates to this, but I think I think you have the most recent one. So we're going to talk a little bit of what a budget is, budget responsibilities, budget process and management, and some suggestions for pitfalls, some conclusion and some questions. Many of these slides are actually stolen from a presentation that we did with newly electeds for county commissioners and county council members. It was put together by four different individuals, two county budget directors, Trish Loeb from Skagit County and Craig Warner from Yakima County, and two county auditors, Mylene Henley, who used to be at San Juan County, some of you might know, and then Heidi Hunt over in Adams County, you might know as well. So we worked very closely with folks actually in the county field when we assembled this presentation. So, you know, I think one of the biggest things I want you to keep in mind is a budget really is about process more than it is about a final product. And because it does not end when there's a final product, it starts through the opportunity to actually have requests. It goes through a refinement process. It goes through adoption process. And then it goes through amendments periodically throughout the year. And it doesn't usually end until the 13th month, the 14th month. I'm not sure how many months you might end up going in as you tune up and close that fiscal year. So while we think about the budget being this one fiscal year and fiscal year 2026 year working on, we've started in 25 and we won't end until 27. So it really is about this process. And we're going to talk a lot about kind of process in particular communication going on. It really is a reflection of your policy goals. And people say, well, we don't have goals. We don't have a strategic plan, et cetera. And believe me, all of your departments or the things that you want to spend money on, whether they are written down as formal policy and formal goals, you are in fact creating a policy statement by what you fund. When you are talking about trying to retain staff and trying to provide adequate compensation and good healthcare, you're making a policy statement, whether you have written that down or not. So you are making goals. It is a financial plan. In the end, it is about balancing expenditures with revenue. So you are, in fact, doing that. You are also starting to talk about service levels. We're going to talk a little bit about that as being one of the choices that you have is, yes, there are constitutional and statutory requirements that have to be achieved. But how you achieve those and the service levels you deliver those at are choices that get made in conjunction with your recommendations, potentially, and finally with the county legislative authority. And ultimately, it's a management tool. It is the ability to identify both how you expend money and how you utilize money and how you control expenditures. It is a tool to deal with the expenditures and ultimately what it is that you do. It's a document that really has a lot to do with your constitutional and statutory duties. County government, if you look, go through both the Constitution and the statutes, and I'm I'll let your attorney give you all your legal advice. However, I just want you to really think about the fact that there's a lot of shalls and a lot of musts of things that counties have to do. And then there are mays that you have to, can do. You don't have to do it. For example, you don't have to fund a 4-H program. There are certain things you do not have to do. And there are things you have to do. So you have to really make sure that you understand that difference as well. You get to define service levels. This is always a tough one. And you know, we now have, and the sheriff may know this more than I. When I left, I think we had 9 counties that did not have 24/7 law enforcement coverage. There was not a deputy on the roads, 24/7. And that's just a harsh reality because of choices they've had to make in service levels, and scary service levels. So when you saw a jailer and a 911 dispatcher being one in the same person in certain counties, really scary stuff. Service levels, choices you've had to make because of funding. It's a plan for your community, and it's an opportunity to talk about, you know, what county government does and does not do in terms of disseminating public information. We're going to spend a little more time on this slide because it really is the fact that there just are a lot of drivers into goes into a county budget. Right now, and I'll start maybe kind of right dead center start, is what's happening with state and federal revenues. This has been, really a little bit of an unknown to us. What is going to happen with federal pass-through funds that may or may not have come to us before for different programs? I don't know if that helped. I don't know how to get rid of this one. Can I move it? Does it do anything? I don't know. I moved it to there. Oh, there we go. So knowing these budget drivers, population growth, there are some counties that are still having rapid growth, particularly in the urban growth areas. Urban growth areas and big urban populations into those urban growth areas has a lot of impact into sheriff deputies because you have a big population growth. Not all counties are experiencing that. What's happening with local revenue and economic conditions? We have been very fortunate in county government over the past number of years to have good sales tax growth, as the state has had. That is starting to slow. And so as revenue growth slows, that has impact not just in the county current expense fund, but it could have impact into other sales tax, the criminal justice sales tax, if you have that, the mental health tax, if you have that. There are going to be certain revenues that you've had really robust that might be in this shrinking or constricting methodology right now. Inflation, I've got 2.7% right now, which I think was the Seattle CPI year to year. I don't know which CPI you utilize. That generally is a good indicator of, you know, if you're in negotiations for union contracts, et cetera. Those are the types of things, or you've got non-represented individuals, inflation and how that impacts salary as well. Emergencies, contingencies, things that are uncertain, things you're planning for. I think I've heard that there's different things that you might be thinking about in relationship to that. There's opportunities. You might have a grant fund that might be coming your direction. And if it's coming your direction, you know, you might get 85% and all you have to do is provide 15%. So you've got to make that choice. Is that 15% worth taking or not? Things to think about associated with that. Budget and reserve policies. Not all counties have these, but what's your threshold? What are you willing to go below in terms of your reserves? Do you want at least 3 months in there? Do you want the 25% that the statute maybe envisions you could have? What is it that you want to have? I can tell you budget people like the larger number. They get really concerned was that number gets lower and you're starting to have to worry about cash flow and moving money between funds to cover. So what's your policy associated with that? Obviously, comparison to other jurisdictions, comps. We use comps all the time, particularly in labor negotiations. labor agreements and wages and benefits. You heard Susan talk about you're in that, what, almost a 75% area. That's pretty uniform across the state. And we're going to talk about the impacts of that associated with that. Infrastructure, probably more of an issue sometimes with public works, but I think I've heard rumors of a jail or discussion of a jail. So thinking about what that looks like and what that might be. I know there's been inundation in coastal areas. You got natural disaster areas. If you have a strategic plan and goals and objectives that you're trying to fund, you just kind of keep going along here, and you can see about all of the different things that are driving into here. What's happening with behavioral health, criminal, and the civil justice trends. And then, you know, we are facing, you look at legislative, executive, and judicial. We sometimes think, well, what's the judicial impact? Well, if you are paying any attention to what the Supreme Court did with caseload standards for public defense, a potential huge impact going forward into counties. And that's just not associated with public defense, but what's going to be the impact into the rest of the court system, into the prosecutors, into the jail? Do you have facility capabilities? Do you have courtroom capability? All the things and that are collateral impacts potentially for you to think of. So as you just kind of look at this world here that is going on, while you might have a piece of the puzzle, there's a broader context that I just really think folks could just think about and pause about. Does anyone have any questions or comments or just observations about this list, what's not on this list, things that jump out at you about this, these drivers? Okay.
I can assure you, though, everybody, we talk about every single one of these.
All right, my computer's frozen up. Okay, I won't spend too much time on this. The budget policies, things that you might be thinking about, there's two that I'm gonna hit. Use of one-time revenues. This is one of the most dangerous ones that counties get caught in, is not tracking why revenues might have gone up. Sales tax is a good example. For example, there's a number of counties. Transportation is one of those. Been a lot of transportation projects in certain geographic areas. Clallam County, for example, got a big boost because of all these fish passage barriers that were going on. DOT pays sales tax. They got this big boost of sales tax revenue. Man, it looks like things are going really well. Well, that's one-time revenue when those projects got. So it's really being careful to look at what's happening with sales tax in particular to see what's happening one-time revenue and not getting caught at saying, whoa, it looks really good. It's a good opportunity for us to perhaps bolster or start a new program when you know that's not sustainable in particular. I think the other piece that has happened a lot right now is what I call that contingency planning. I know the state did a lot during this budget year because of the uncertainty of federal dollars. Counties are not quite as dependent on federal funding as potentially the state is. However, once the state starts to have to think about funding, potentially Medicaid reductions, are they going to say, sorry, counties, we're not going to deliver some certain set of fundings for you? The City County Assistance Fund may be a good example. They may say, we're no longer going to provide funding. So really thinking about what might be happening in a broader context of state and federal. So I want to talk about structural deficit. And I've got a good graphic to show. But this is that situation, and you heard Susan indicate, where if you just look at the requests coming in, compared to the revenue that's projected, you have a structural deficit. I don't know whether or not that included new ads or not, or new program starts or not, but a budget deficit is just when your economy is going full and yet you still have a budget deficit. It's when our reoccurring expenses are increasing faster than recurring revenues. And that is the challenge county government has faced. And we'll talk about why that is. But that is a structural deficit. And almost every county in the state of Washington has a structural deficit going. It's just become one of the challenges. There is no doubt about the fact that between coronavirus relief funds, ARPA funds, good sales tax, that our structural deficit has been masked at times in certain counties. There's no doubt that that has occurred. But nonetheless, we are seeing kind of the return to what I will call normalcy while those resources are diminishing, sales taxes flattening to dropping. And we are certainly seeing no more ARPA and coronavirus relief funds available to us. I won't spend any more time on this. It's just kind of just redundant, but it is this imbalance between annual projected revenue and expenditures. And that is just that structural deficit. So what happens when you have a structural deficit? Let's say we are revenues growing by 4% and expenses are growing by 6%. We'll talk about what's driving those expenses to make it like 6%. But if you start with a 10% surplus at year 7, you now are into a point where not having surplus anymore and you are over expending. You just in county government, we don't have the luxury to go out and borrow that money to make that up. We don't do that. We have to have an annual balanced budget. So that is what a structural deficit looks like. That is why you start to have conversations even during a decent economy period about we've got to constrain expenditures. And when you think about your number one expenditure in county current expense fund, this probably isn't true of the road fund because you've got capital, et cetera, but it's labor. It's 72% in general and across all counties, 75% in yours, it's labor. And so you start to have to talk about which is the most difficult thing to talk about. It's a reduction in force. Really hard conversations to have. But I just want to kind of illustrate that. The causes of it for us in county government, it was a citizens initiative was the start of it. And it was, well, there's actually an earlier start than that, but I'll cover that. But it was the big one. And just to illustrate to you what that impact was in Island County, this is the limit of 1% plus new construction. Prior to Initiative 747, where you can now just have 1% plus new construction, Island County in 1998, your property tax growth was 4.5%. In 1999, it was 6%. In 2000, it dropped to 1.42%. 2001, 2%. And in 2000, going forward, it's been 1% plus new construction. So you just think about the fact, I suspect, I don't know what a 1% gets you in county, in the county currently. 100,000. So 100,000. So think about that in 1998, that would have been $600,000 in new revenue that you could have had, which is now down to 100,000. And think that accumulates or it banks. So a couple counties around you, for example, San Juan in 2000 took a 12% increase. In 2000, they had bank capacity. Not many counties that do that. At the flip side, Whatcom County, Pete Kremen, he was the county executive there for years. He refused to take even the 1%. There was 0% across the board, even prior to and after for a number of years. So there's some counties that are very dependent on it, but some that are not. So we are definitely designed to be property tax-based. It is our major general fund revenue source, certainly our major tax revenue source. It is sometimes masked by new construction. This is true in fast-growing counties in particular, where you're getting all the growth above the 1%. Up to 25 to 30 some percent of sales tax revenue is oftentimes associated with new construction. So think about that if you've got a major new construction type activities going on. So if you start to pull back on new construction, it not only affects your property tax growth, it also affects your sales tax growth. So there's definitely a linkage there. And it's great for real estate excise tax when you have new construction, but that's a non-general fund. The other causes of our structural deficit is salaries and benefits. You know, you think about cost of living adjustments. I don't know what your contracts are going to require, but I can guarantee you most of the times they are greater than what your new revenue growth is going to be. Just salaries and benefits, but certainly salaries, cost of living adjustments, a step increase alone. I don't know, depending on your range, is anywhere from 2.5 to 5%. It goes from, you know, some counties it's only 7 years, some it goes to 25 years. You might be spending $1 million, $1.5 million before anything happens. You're providing those step increases. It's a huge just cost driver to counties. Healthcare costs. we're typically thrilled to hear it's in single digits. For those of you who have been around a while, you've seen and remember when healthcare costs is in the double digits. So again, that's a big chunk, which is far outstripping the cost of or the revenue growth we're seeing as well. The risk pool liability insurance, whether it's you're in a risk pool or whether or not you are on your own in a self-insured, the cost of liability insurance is one of those that has also gone up dramatically. Unfunded mandates, you know, this is a term of art, but it also has a legal mandate as well, legal definition as well. The caseload standards that are coming from the courts, not created by the legislature in this case, caseload standards are going to be a huge unfunded mandate unless something changes within the legislature. You could see a tripling of that cost. And I suspect in your county, I don't know, it's got to be close to $1 million a year. I don't know, 800,000. I'm not sure what your county would be, but it's got to be a significant set of resources. Reduction in revenue. I think the clerk is online. I think, you know, when a couple of years ago, you know, we saw a change in fees. A lot of fees are happening that are used to support the criminal justice system. The legislature doesn't want the criminal justice system to be paid for by criminals, so they pulled back on those fees. The treasurer's office, a couple of years ago, instead of interest coming back to the general fund, they reduced that. Again, a loss of revenue to the county current expense fund on interest penalties for people not paying their property tax on time. And the Growth Management Act has a really interesting impact. And it was subtle. The legislature always promised they would come back and fix it. But it is designed to drive development, and in particular, sales tax generators inside city limits. And so getting a Costco in the unincorporated portion of the county is almost nil. It doesn't happen. There might be one down in Hazeldale and might be one in Parkland and Pierce County and Hazeldale in Clark County. But otherwise, you're just not seeing cost drive, those things that generate sales tax. And so it's driven that large sales tax growth inside city limits and not no longer in the unincorporated portion of the county. So what's the impact? You know, this is why what makes, you know, property tax so much more important to us than to cities and counties. We have two basic tax sources in county government. We have property taxes and we have sales taxes. Those are two major revenue sources, tax sources into county government, where you look at the cities and the state, property taxes, sales taxes, B&O taxes, and of which counties really have never wanted B&O taxes, frankly, but it's a major revenue source for some jurisdictions. And obviously utility taxes is another one we don't have. So we are highly dependent on property tax compared to our other partners. There. I'm not going to spend too much time on this. Susan has talked to you a little bit about deadlines associated with the budget. Most of these are laid out in RCW 3640, which governs the county budgeting process. You do have some alternative scheduling options that are available to you outside of the statute if you create them. So just to know, the schedule really is well laid out in statute, but you do have the ability to create an alternative schedule for yourself. You just have to have a budget adopted by the end of the year. And preferably that if you're adopting on December 31st, it probably isn't a whole lot of time to make the adjustments to start the new year off. I'll talk briefly about the county legislative authority responsibilities, both the commissioners and a council in a charter county. The final budget to be fixed. So the board has this responsibility to fix and determine each item of the budget. And in doing so, they have the opportunity to talk about the detail. And so they have some authority to talk about both the number as well as the manner in which it's expended. So they have some broad statutory authorities associated with that budget and how it is fixed, how it is set. After they set the expenditures, they then say, how much are we going to levy to find the revenue to be able to pay for it? So that's the budget. this is what we're going to expend monies on. This is what we're going to levy. And that levy is typically comprised of, in our case, is the property tax levy. It is just directly linked to the financials and information that is provided by the assessor's office to be able to determine what the assessed value rate is going to be. And then, you know, you get to determine, is there any portion of surplus you're going to need? What's the other revenue sources, state, federal, user fees, et cetera? What are the other resources? And so you come together with what that that spending plan is going to be, both on the expenditure and the revenue side. And that typically happens in most counties, frankly, in the first week of December. That's when most counties do adopt a county budget. I know you historically have adopted earlier than that, but most counties, it is that first week in December is when the final hearing is done and the county legislative authorities adopt their annual budget. There are some counties that do have biennial budgets, but not many, but most still have annual budgets. And then throughout the year, we go through the process to do transfers and shifts and supplemental appropriations. It is not a static document. It is a living document. Some counties do these monthly, some counties do these quarterly, but it is this constant ability to transfer and move funds within departments. You might have a contingency fund where you move money out of contingency fund into departments. There's some counties that put a large contingency in because they don't know what's going to happen with union contracts. And so they hold funds available to potentially distribute those in. So there's different ways that counties use contingency, but there's ways that they can do that. They can actually, in that contingency appropriation, stipulate what they anticipated going for or request for this can be the following. So there's different ways that counties are utilizing and looking at contingencies. The last one, and I just remind folks of this, and this is not a threat. I know people sometimes take it as a threat. It's different than when I was an elected official, where if you overspent your budget, you were four times responsible for the over expenditure. Now you're just responsible for the actual over expenditure. So this is really just saying that an over expenditure and incurring a liability greater than your appropriation rests with you, the official. I didn't go back to look at the statute to remind me whether the county official was a department elected official and or the elected official, but I suspect it's probably uniform. I'd have to go back and look at the statute. But it's just a reminder that you are the one that's responsible, and that it's good practice for both the auditor and the commissioners to not, in particular, let a warrant go through that is beyond the item that has been budgeted. You would hold that and then come back and make the transfer and then make the expenditure, because ultimately it's a violation of statute. So again, budget monitoring, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, is just a really important feature. I am unaware of this ever happening. I think everyone is really cognizant that we don't want this to happen. We make budget adjustments clear to the very end of into the first year of our first month, and sometimes the second month of the following year, to make sure that this doesn't happen. But it's a great reminder that, you know, the board could in fact not make a transfer and you would become subject to that expenditure. Questions on any of those elements?
Is the budget, as you're talking about it, when you make the trick, like when you set up a budget, is it that everybody has to just operate it within that total amount within that budget, or with the line item within that budget?
It really depends on how you have adopted the budget via resolution. If you do it via line item, you could make that statement within the budget resolution. If you do that, you will probably be doing constant transfers from line item to line item. You can also do it by operations and separate personnel and operations separately. That's how most counties do it. They do personnel costs as one, and operations is one, and they don't, and capital be separate, and they don't let funds transfer within those without the authority of the board. So you'll see that, but that's more typical, frankly, is you don't see, I don't know if I know any county that actually does authorize a line item budget, because you would, all of a sudden someone needs $25 more in tools and they've got $25 in utilities that they're just moving money back and forth all the time.
I would quit.
Yeah, it's possible. We're seeing counties more and more, and I think as more legislators return to counties, we're seeing this more likely, as we're seeing provisos where counties, and if you look at a state budget, it is just laced with provisos. X amount, you know, $1 million is given to the prosecutor, of which $25,000 is for the following. So you're seeing stipulation of the appropriation. That's the detail part where you look at, it gives you the ability to say, you know, we're giving you $1 million, $25,000 is for, I don't know, what would be the computer system that you utilize, or to acquire a computer system or something like that. So something like that, or computer software for law library or something.
So in counties that do that, that budget at that at a really high level, or do it by those stipulations or whatever, do they still adopt or publish a line item budget, saying that this was the source of the ultimate budget resolution? Was we got down to the line item detail level, but then we just adopted something that gave department heads discretion within whatever the groups are, whether it's operations and salaries or whatever.
Typically, that would be the way. And if they're starting to like proviso it, it's just recognizing that, you know, you got $1 million for small tools or something. That's a lot of small tools. 40,000 for small tools. And if they said, you know, 5,000 was for X, that director or elected official would know that they still have broad authority for, you know, 35,000, but 5,000 has to go to this. Yep. But we're seeing, and that's a remnant coming back, in particular in counties that have had legislators, in particular, because that is the legislature, you know, obviously wants to control spending of the executive branch. So that's how they do it. Yep. Okay.
Eric, before you leave that proviso, I'm not sure I fully understand it. This is Commissioner St. Clair. What you're saying is that the executive, that we can fund an area, so we could fund technology and create a budget item of 50,000, but we know we have some significant upgrades that need to happen in one area, so we're going to require that of that 50,000, 25,000 are spent as we direct. Is that what you mean by proviso? Because I'm not sure I'm fully
understanding. Yeah, that would certainly be the way. Or, and this is what the state does. We did this when I was in Franklin County. Actually, we referenced a list that had been created by the Department of Information Services. And so you could do that. That's what the state does. They reference, I think they're JLARC lists, all Joint Legislative Audit Review Committee lists. They reference all of these different lists that are created.
And so if it is deemed partway through a year that the auditor doesn't need new election software, Sheila, I'll pick on you for a moment, no offense meant at all, but, and she says, we don't need to spend that money. Do they abrogate that 25,000, or do they come back and say, we request this to be reallocated to this, or to become part of our authorities? How has that been?
Well, if you're asking whether if it was provisoed for that specific purpose, it can't be spent for another purpose. However, if it's just within a broad line item, they could, and it's not stipulated, they could utilize that for something else. because so it's
if
not.
If it was provisoed for that specific purpose and they deem that they don't need that specific purpose, it just goes back to the general budget then.
Yeah, or it would either at the end of the year, or you would identify that as a potential transfer that could be made to some other purpose, okay. Utilize in, which is done in 3640-100. You would transfer that, which is on the screen.
That answers my question. Thank you.
Yep.
Kelly has a question.
No, I think that rebuts it. If it's funds for a special use that you approved for this purpose, it has to be used for that purpose. But generally, when your budget's adopted, every independently elected official has broad authority to how they spend that money in that adopted budget, not down to the line item.
Depending on how we write the resolution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. To the level of detail that you want to write it to. It's just also more of a budget tracking tool as well. And it just becomes, it's a tool. I think that's all I'm trying to say. And we're seeing more and more counties use it as a tool.
I just want to be really clear though on the you could be responsible for paying it back part. That was for the total amount at the end, not for each individual line, right?
Yes, it depends on how you're budgeting within again.
Yeah,
yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I just felt like being clear on that part.
Yep.
You have to be pretty reckless though. It has to be like intentional, reckless.
Not paying attention.
Not just, well, I'm just saying no, it's...
I mean,
it's almost never used for a reason.
I know, but I've seen the board do $800,000 transfers to fix budgets. Would you call that reckless, not paying attention, or would you call that like, oops?
Yeah,
underfunded.
Yeah, well, yeah. I think that's the question becomes in your monitoring process. Are you Are you on a monthly basis? Are you watching, are you tracking that and identifying that as something that is going to need to be fixed? And I think that's the piece that you definitely want to do.
I'm sorry, what?
Me too.
Yeah, you know what that means is you're overfunding.
Yep. All right. Yeah. We're going to talk about communication later. Yeah. I had a
good one.
Although I will say this is my first job out of college. I was managing, some of you might know, Bellingham, Bloedel Donovan Park. And I can be sarcastic. I speak two English and sarcasm. I speak two languages. So she was a junior in high school. And she looks at me after one of my sarcastic comments. She said, there is truth in sarcasm. So it's always good to remember that, you know, we'll be truthful.
So... In a situation, I'm just going to pick on Kelly.
Yeah.
So the auditors or the assessor's budget includes, say, $100,000 for operations and $300,000 for salary, and that's how the budget resolution is adopted. But there was a line item by line item proposal that was submitted. Is there any need to go in and make the transfers or the budget amendments if within operations he's in excess in some line items but underspending in other line items? It's
not in operations.
Okay.
Or salaries.
Or salaries. As long, so it all really just comes back to how the resolution is.
Yep.
Is there any county that does that just as a cleanup so that the public can see what the reality is? Or is it still tracked by line item when they adopt a budget at that high level?
I don't know of any county that goes at the end to clean up every line item. I don't know that. I think they'll clean up bottom lines to either move money within interdepartmental or, so for example, if he needed, I think 100 and 300 were the examples you used. So if it was 101 and you had $1,000 available, you would do that adjustment.
Okay.
Yep. And sometimes
sometimes
what they'll actually will do is they'll just do a bottom line adjustment at the end for the whole county or for the individual departments. Yeah. It just depends. Yeah. I mean, the best way, and this we'll talk about budget monitoring, is is whether it's a finance, whether you're using your finance committee or an expanded committee to do monthly, really a monthly look at, you know, both revenue and expenditures. It's identifying where are those pinch points, or, you know, we're not bringing in money for the jail contracts that we had anticipated we were going to bring in, except we're still spending the same amount of money on the jail. So, you know, okay, what are we going to do? We're probably going to have to make some sort of transfer from contingency or from where. So,
well, then, so what about a more detailed budget where the resolution is by line item, or at least some more granular level than just operations? Do counties typically, you said some counties make monthly transfers to adjust their budgets. Is that why? Because they adopted something at a really granular level and they have to just keep rebalancing? Or
Well, it wouldn't be the granular level. It would just be there was something happening in a department that they needed more operation supply money for, or they were making choices of, you know, or they might have needed more overtime budget because of vacancies and that they were not being covered by the vacancies. There are different ways that why people are doing it. Most people are not adjusting granularly.
Okay. Yep. Thanks.
Yep. So your county, most counties, we're doing on time, we're doing pretty good. Just to think about, most counties either have a budget office or they work in conjunction between the Board of County Commissioners and the Auditor's Office. Just depends on the system that they have created to look at assembling the budget and then going all through forecasting, you know, reserve policies, revenue forecasts. So I'm going to spend a lot of time on this. Just remind folks that most of what we do are driven by county codes, by RCWs, by the, we don't have a lot of citizens sometimes think that we spend a lot of money unnecessarily. There are not many things that we spend money on that are not driven by the RCWs in the state of Washington and the constitutional responsibilities we have. We run the entire trial court system for the state of Washington. We run the entire kind of the property tax system for the state of Washington. We do all of these functionalities for the state of Washington. So always want to remind folks associated with that. Forecasting is really, really an important piece. And so I'm just going to hammer, this is one of my, my messages, we'll talk about it later, is forecasting expenditures and revenue and getting more precise. And so when we underproject revenue and then we overproject expenditures, all we have done is add money to surplus, which we ultimately perhaps didn't need to do something. So the more precise we can be on both the expenditure and the revenue projection side, the better off the citizens and ultimately you all will be. Now, I know it feels really good at the end of the year to see a surplus, to turn back money. It feels really good I turned back money. But I'll use an example. I see counties, I don't know if you do a road shift here in Island County. No. I see counties do a road shift and turn back money at the end of the year. They didn't need to do a road shift. They took they've taxed a set of citizens inside the incorporated that they didn't need to. And so being accurate in expenditures is really important in relationship to what you have to collect on the revenue side. And so really think that that is one of the flaws that counties find ourselves in on a fairly routine basis, is we underproject revenues, we overproject expenditures.
I was taught that way. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was taught that way when I started.
It's a safe way to do it.
Because of the difficulty of generating revenue, and because people will push, when you do it that way, they'll push programs, they'll create new programs all the way up to the revenue generating line. And then if you have a budget downturn, you don't have any ability to absorb that hit. You got to like kind of plan in there, like conservatively estimate revenue, aggressively budget for expenditures. Even if you don't think you're going to be fully loaded in your staffing for a year, you put that on the books to hold that capacity in place. Like legit, that's how I learned to do it, so that you didn't run out of money because you can't just make more. I know you're smiling at me, but that's how I learned it.
There's a lot of folks that do that. I mean,
flip side sucks if it goes the other way.
Well, here. I mean, that's kind of how we were taught, was that very model that you say, try not to do that, because, and I mean, now we can be more aggressive because we have healthy fund balance, but we got healthy fund balance
because you were doing exactly that. So you were taxing citizens for revenue you ultimately didn't need.
Or I say, maybe, Eric, that if I may, what I say is we're leveling out services so that our citizens aren't experiencing peaks and valleys, and our employees aren't being hired and fired and hired and fired, and that we're able to weather a storm.
And you could, depending on what you do with that reserve, like you call it, the state calls it their rainy day fund, or, you know, in utilities, we call it rate stabilization fund, where... So instead of raising rates every year, you actually put money into a rate stabilization fund because you raise rates maybe 5%, even though it's only going to be you only need 1%. So you're not changing rates every year. You have a rate stabilization fund. So if you're utilizing those funds that way and being honest with the citizens that that's what you're doing, I think there's nothing wrong with that.
It's about how you tell the story.
Yeah, it's about how you tell the story.
Well, but in 2008, we didn't have that reserve fund balance, and we started cutting everybody.
Yeah.
And then we can provide services too. So I think that's part of why we're in a better situation now.
Right. And we see our fellow counties will do, they'll do reductions in force, and they'll do furloughs. And I mean, it makes being an employee, scary. We do everything we can not to do that. And we've been able to do that because we've had the funds.
But if you're using reserve fund balance now already on your revenue side, I don't think that's an issue.
I mean, right. I think to avoid 2008, what you have to do is when you start dipping into that fund balance, you have to start making those incremental changes, right? So you don't have that mass 10% of your workforce is out of a job. You start slowly pulling back, so that you can try to even out without that. But you're freaking me out because that's not how I learned. And I don't think you'll have him to object to the stable. I don't like to relearn things I learned. I'm not known for my flexibility.
We'll talk about that as well.
Can I just, because I was thinking of a similar thing, when you're doing forecasts, and Jill mentioned, we have staff vacancies, and that's especially since the pandemic, that's what accounts for a lot of the underspending that goes back to fund balance. A lot of us have been unable to fill out our rosters.
Yep.
And is that something that people
absolutely
build into their forecast?
A number of counties filled that in, so the number of counties would almost predict 92% of your salaries and benefits are going to be utilized. And that other 8% is going to be forecasted as revenue that's going to be available to spend. Yep. Yep. Absolutely. There are some counties that actually have told, I think Benton County is one of these, where you've got to absorb your cost of living adjustments or certain costs at the department and office level from vacancies. So there's different ways to be able to think about that. But yes, there are jurisdictions that actually forecast and predict that. And you could go back and look previous years is how much is our under expenditure in salaries because of vacancies. We've not been able to recruit, or we've got that turnover transition. We're still budgeting those positions. We're not filling those positions. That's an amount of money that we can include as a revenue source and not necessarily have to generate revenue elsewhere. Yep.
So Eric, and we were talking a lot about this when we were all together on the East Coast last week, and one county actually designates it kind of, they name it their vacancy fund.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And they use their vacancy fund for interdepartmental transfers to cover unexpected costs. So it might be used to cover overtime, or it might be used to cover other things. that is the specificity that I heard you saying, which is if we're going to budget conservatively, which we have done as long as I've been here as well, then we might want to be more specific about where we place that into some kind of a reserve fund and what the purpose is, so it's more transparent, such as using the fact that we never fully staff out what we budget to. Because we just take, if we're doing any position, it pretty much covers the full year. Occasionally we've started them in June. But when I was taught budgeting, if I knew a position was coming on in February, I budgeted as a 10-month position. And that's different than what we do in local government.
Yeah. And certainly a tool that you would have available is to look at the history behind vacancies. And I don't know whether that's going to change. But we're still having, across the board, difficulty recruiting certain sets of professional positions in particular. If you try and go and recruit for an accountant, if you go and try and recruit for an engineer, if you're trying to recruit for an attorney, public health nurse, there are a certain subset of professionals, IT, that it is, we just have vacancies. We just have a really hard time attracting. So it'd be another tool for you to be able to utilize. This is just a reminder. I call it kind of the 70-70. And this is certainly true of your county, this is not true of your county. Your county spends much less on the justice and public safety amount. And I don't know whether it is inclusive of all the same things that at a statewide level we're tracking, from, you know, the clerk to the, we call it criminal and civil justice, from the clerk and the prosecutor and public defense and the sheriff and the jail and district court, superior court, probation, and all those types of things. But across the state, this is what counties average. And so most of our funds, and I think you're closer to almost like 40%, I think, in public safety. But I don't know if it's encompassing all of ours.
Yeah, ours doesn't include all of those that you said.
Yeah.
For the sheriff and the prosecuting attorney, I think, is where we're at.
Okay.
40-some percent.
Okay.
Yep. I just figured it out.
Yeah, Virginia. Thanks. And then, you know, general fund, you know, you're at 75% statewide, we were at 72% at salaries, wages, and benefits. And this is current expense fund again. And it gets really, I think, to your point, you know, Commissioner Bacon, which is, you know, we want stability, and stability is maintaining FTEs. We're service-driven organizations, and so we are heavy FTE dependent on the county current expense fund. And so having stability assures stability in service delivery. There's no doubt about that. And so, but it's also expensive. This is where we're spending our money, and it's expensive to retain staff, and it's expensive not to retain staff. So kind of goes both directions. And then, you know, just quickly getting your message out, you know, Susan actually did a really nice job in her PowerPoint last year with using some graphics about where does our money go. These are a couple of examples from Yakima County a number of years ago now, kind of outdated now, they're almost 20 years, hard to believe. But, you know, where's the dollar go? Where's your property tax dollar go? And obviously, you know, people think it, you know, because we collect it, we spend it. That's not the case. Over half of the money that comes to the county treasurer is actually going out to the school system in the state. So both either locally or at the state level, you can see the rest. Where's our general fund going? So folks can be able to see where general fund is going. In Yakima County, public safety and law and justice is 83%. If you know anything about Yakima County, that should not probably surprise you. That's a
the Springs of Washington.
Yes. Yeah. Tough location. And what's happened with general fund history, so people can see some trends. So a lot of charts, you know, just graphically illustrating what's going on is very, very helpful as well.
I got to go back.
Yes.
In those counties, like Yakima County, the pretty big county. So if they spend 83%, what they generate in their 20% that they're, I'm not doing the math to make that right. Let's say
17.
Thank you. 17% is enough to cover the treasurer, the auditor, the assessor, the in counties that have smaller budgets, I bet you're going to see that public safety share, it has to go down a little bit because you've got to still cover all those basic costs. It's, you still have to deliver an election. You still have to, and so those fixed costs of government operations, right? Bigger counties have more discretionary money to put towards things. I just wanted to point that out because we, at the, like, you know, if we have a current expense of $30,000, right, our 17% has to be big enough to pay for all of the same kind of services that Yakima has to pay for. That's yeah. all. Okay.
Yeah, go back one more
second. And a different service level, but yes.
Yes, but I just, there's some like math comparisons that I didn't want people to get lost on, right. which is the expectations don't change, just the amount of money you have to pay for. Right. Like I think that about like Wakayakum County or Ponderay County, I don't know how they'd get there.
Oh, the dollar.
Yeah. And Yakima County gets 13.9 essentially percent of their property tax dollars. Island County gets 5.0
Yeah.
Percent.
Right. Really?
Oh, yes. Yeah. The levy. It's insane.
I wasn't trying to be critical yep. of your thing. I was yep. like, because I feel bad for counties that are so much smaller than ours because right. they have to do the same level of service in terms of those basic expectations, and they don't have any money to do that.
Well, think about one of your you know, close county by. I mean, they made a very dramatic choice to go to 32-hour work weeks.
Right.
I'm sure they're not. It was a, you know, it was a pretty dramatic choice to change like that. Fun Tides, just a concert reminder, is there is definitely a restriction of funds, color of money, that oftentimes we would say in county government, that there's probably enough money. We just can't utilize it the manner in which we think we would like to utilize it because it is restricted. And paying attention to those restrictions is extremely important. These are suggestions from, that came really from work that the county auditors and the county budget directors did. You know, it's a team sport. And while the county legislative authority does have this role of adoption, it really is an engaging team sport, and being engaged and participating is extremely important. You know, doing your own research, looking, we were just talking about research is, you know, in looking at what has been our vacancy rate in positions over the past 3-5 years and what has that resulted in savings. You potentially can actually think about looking at that is monies that could be utilized or repurposed on an annual basis as well. Or you can utilize it strategically to say, this is going to be added to our ending fund balance, and or it gives us that cushion, so to speak. And that's what some jurisdictions do utilize it for. You've got a good budget schedule, which is great. Having meetings with departments, having meetings with the offices. I separate the departments versus the offices. Offices are those of the elected officials, departments being those of the underneath the Board of County Commissioners. Having those, spending time, not rushing through, is really, really important. And it's okay to have more than one meeting. It's okay to have folks back as well during the process. Maintaining that, I'm scrolling down, but I'm pushing the wrong button here. Maintaining a long-term perspective for that fiscal sustainability that you talked about is really, really important. You could be commended by that. There are not counties that are having that long-term fiscal sustainability that have some real challenges. And communications, we're going to talk about that here shortly. This is also a suggestion from budget folks, which is... it's all right to get into the weeds. Those are those operational ones. But those aren't probably where your significant savings are going to be or investments are going to be. They are going to be more in those strategic questions is, you know, what are we going to do and why are we going to do it? Which of these that are we going to do? So you're thinking more strategically versus operationally. I tell this story. I'd love to write an article one time. Well, I was a county commissioner and my fellow commissioners, one owned a trucking company and one owned a logging company. And we got to the public works budget hearing and they started talking, they were going to buy X amount of new trucks or something. And we spent 20 minutes talking about the type of trucks they were going to buy and what color they were going to be. We weren't talking about, do we even need these trucks? And what are these trucks going to do? We were focused on these operational details that were really not important to the functionality of the budget. So say that at a different time. I encourage you to think more strategically in the budgeting process. Pitfalls, I think under projecting revenue and over projecting expenditures can be a pitfall for you. Not asking questions. This is a time to be inquisitive. And both sides, I had the county clerk before, I know Mike Killian, who was the Franklin County clerk. He had a budget request in, and he was constantly touching base with me when I was the interim county administrator there last year. He was constantly talking to me, are we okay? Do you need more information? It was at times, perhaps, you know, Mike, we're all right. I would have told you otherwise. However, you know, it has got to be engaging. It's got to be both ways in the communication effort. That insufficient reserve, so good for you for having a good solid set of reserves. Obviously not following statutory requirements is not a good idea. And not monitoring your budgets. That when you, if an $800,000 expenditure creeps up on you, yeah, that's a problem. That's a problem. That's a monitoring problem. That's a communication problem. And how do we overcome that? Looking at revenues, looking at overspending, starting to monitor that. You generally don't see those trends during the first quarter, but they'll start to emerge during the second quarter. They certainly are there during the third quarter, and that's when you've got to really assure that you're tracking. But you'll start to see them emerging, and if you start to see those trends emerging, you start to take that corrective actions in the quarterly or monthly budget transfers that you might have. I always thought it was Clint Eastwood that said this, but it's not. It was in Cool Hand Luke, and it was actually not Clint Eastwood that said this. You know, what we have here is a failure to communicate, and that's going to be the transition into talking a little bit about getting you to think about what do you want communication to look like during the budgeting process? What's going to be helpful? What do you want to see? And we'll transition into that in the remaining 15 minutes or so. Questions, comments, things to think about. The summary is just really, we talked really most about these, and I just want to, thanks for being patient as we geek out a little bit on county budgeting. I'm going to stop sharing my screen. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Questions for Eric? I have one to kind of start us off with, I guess. So you mentioned at one point finance committee, and this is on my mind because we had our finance committee met this morning, but our finance committee is made up of the treasurer, county commissioner, and the auditor. But you were talking about finance committee that would include budget. And can you kind of talk about that?
Yeah. So the finance committee that you are referring to is the statutorily required finance committee, which is the chair, the board, the auditor, and the treasurer. They meet quarterly. So they meet quarterly in their formal setting. There's nothing to say that at other periods of time that they couldn't meet. You could broaden the perspective, add a budget person, add, you know, someone else that's been really helpful. We typically see in other counties that finance committee might be the budget person. It might be the, you know, an investment person from the treasurer's office. It might be someone, the chief accountant from the auditor's office, creating more of a finance team that is also looking on that monthly basis or that weekly basis. Weekly is too frequently, monthly basis to look at the types of things you're talking about in terms of revenue and expenditure. And so there's just a broader set of eyes thinking, boy, that I'm not liking this trend or this revenue looking really good, or sales tax coming in 2 or 3% lower than we had forecasted. What's that doing to, you know, what's that doing on the other side? Or, you know, why has, I'll give you an example. County that I was involved with was not seeing the transfer from the organization company running their commissary fund for a number of years. And it's $1 million that they had not brought transferred from the private commissary fund into the county coffers. You know, that was kind of, that's a monitoring problem. Mm-hmm. I'm not seeing that you're not seeing that type of revenue. So.
Thank you.
Yep.
Now for communication, do you want us just to start talking about it, or you have it? Are you?
I do. No, not. I don't want you to start talking about it. I want to cover. I'm going to work from my. I won't even get up now, so I will just stay here. I'm going to work from my left to the right to talk a little bit about things, and then we can either start talking about it. I also have put some papers in front of people so that they can jot some notes down, and I can capture them. So this is time consuming, and in intentional communication and thinking about, you know, clarity to it. I know this isn't everyone's strong point, but empathy and relationship to this purpose, and it's got to be planned. You really have to think about how you want the communication to happen. And we're going to talk, and I have a report that's going to be due back to the commissioner. So we're going to think about it in terms of three different areas. The first one is going to be measure what matters. You know, you will start to act in the way that you know you're going to start to measure. We're talking about maybe some key performance indicators, and then we'll talk about employee experience metrics, which I would really probably coin as department head and elected officials experience in relationship to the budgeting process and the communication associated with it. You may not be satisfied with the final product, and I can't say that you're going to like the final product, because that is ultimately a decision. And we know as we go through the budgeting process, there are funds that I'd love to say that you're going to get all the money that you want, but that is simply not a reality in the world. But can you be satisfied with the process and the communication that existed during the actual budget process? That is something we have greater control over than the fact that there simply is not enough revenue to do all the things that is necessary in county government. Therefore, choices are made. Therefore, people are dissatisfied with the end product. So how do we separate out the outcome of the end product versus the process that you go through to get there? So we're going to talk a little bit about that. So we're going to put some ideas. I'm happy to do it just in conversation, but I know there may be some people that are more vocal than other people, and I don't want to shut those out. That's why we have sheets of paper that I can pick up at the end as you think about this. So I want to structure it a little bit, and we can talk about it. You can share as you go. You can write stuff down. I want to talk, though, about, you know, just the first, you have four pages, and we actually do have, if 3:30 is a hard cutoff, we will then have to cut it off. But I really am interested, and I'm going to skip the communication principles and values, which is, you know, what, you know, I value clarity, and frankly, I value brevity. I don't like a lot of excess. However, some people want the excess. So, you know, we've different people. And so you're communicating to a variety of different audiences as well. So maybe people can write down principles and we can pick those up later. But I'm really interested to know what will effective communication look like to you? What does it look like to you in this process? And so ideas, thoughts, the board, I think, legitimately has heard from department heads and elected officials of their concerns and wants to respond to those concerns to create a good budgeting process that has communication as a component to it. It's intentional so I'd love to just hear, and the board I know would love to hear. And so what our goal will be is to build around what we hear to talk about, you know, what would we measure in relationship to success? How do we measure your experience? Did we meet your experience that you desire in terms of communication? And what are some of those key performance indicators? So there's both a goal here, but then there may be a series of activities that we would need to perform to achieve some of that too. So we'll be working a little bit on that after today as well. So comments about what would effective communication during the budget process look like to you? And department heads, please don't hesitate to chime in as well. You folks sometimes, you know, I know it's elected sometimes, you give way to them, but department heads, please don't hesitate to chime in too. And I'm married. I don't mind quiet time, so.
I think Greg will go.
Really?
Well, Greg, you are the one who said we didn't communicate enough last year, so.
I was going to say, I think the process that has been put in place for this year has been, in my mind, a refreshing improvement.
It's the same process.
Well,
hey, Jill, let's not get defensive.
Okay. Here, Commissioner Maybe Johnson. For you, it
yep,
is.
Yep. So this is his experience. So,
well, actually, yeah. I mean, I think there were years where we would submit our budget on paper, and then I would try to have a session. And actually, last year I did have a session with the board, but there were a number of years where I would try to have a session with the board, and they would say, well, we don't want to hear from you. We've got your budget. And it gets to a whole other aspect of communication that I think was missing and misunderstood. And that was that, at least to me, and I've made this point before, a big part of the budget is it gives me an opportunity to be held accountable to the people of Island County, where I could come in and say, hey, I'm getting $2 million. This is what I do with it. And being shut out of that process was pretty frustrating. So last year, from my perspective, but I think it's a legitimate one, there were some pretty significant changes made in how money was allocated. And they were so significant, you would have expected them to be explicitly pointed out to us. And by us, I mean the department heads and elected officials. And they weren't. And so we learned about it in January when we saw the numbers of the approved budgets. And we're shocked to see that some significant portions of our budgets were completely zeroed out. And so that was, I thought a failure to communicate. I was chastised for not paying close enough attention to the budget agendas to know that that was happening. But when I look back at the budget agendas, they simply said things like budget discussion. And so it wasn't great notice. And I feel like we had a meeting. It was a frank meeting where everybody here just about was there. And I actually thought it was a really good meeting. It was an open meeting and there was good discussion. And I left that meeting thinking that I felt heard. And I feel that this year, after that experience, we're all kind of trying to stay on the same page. And I think people are being cognizant of that issue, whether they agree with my perspective or not. I feel like it's a better process and that I've had more engagement. And maybe that's just part of that. It's on my part, too, because I've adjusted my level of intentional engagement, although I was disengaged for a while because I was in trial and busy with some other stuff. But I finally got caught up.
I think I heard how important the session with the board was. So being in front of the board is something important for you. In particular, and I've heard this a lot from times when I probably didn't do this very well, an awareness of any what I call significant budget changes in advance. For opportunity for communication. The no surprises component. Okay. Other comments? What will effective communication look like to you during this budget process? I appreciate something that prosecutor said, and that was you potentially are stepping up your engagement. And I cannot tell you how important, I mean, the two-way communication component is, it is equal engagement that I know, I don't want to go back to that Mike Killian example, but who was the clerk in Franklin County, he was fully engaged. He had an interest, he checked in, he was constantly almost like refreshing, hit the refreshing button almost, like, okay, I need to do that.
I probably wasn't that good, and a lot of it was through my staff, but I feel like I have a better handle on my own budget this year, as opposed to just passing it along with my administrative staff.
Yeah, well, I think that's an interesting point, though, which is a little bit of an expectation that if you have staff that are engaged, that they are engaged with you, that the board should probably be able to trust that we are talking to your chief deputy, or we are talking to that there's a confidence that is going to you as well. I don't know if that's fair, but that probably is that, or maybe that's just a wrong assumption that they shouldn't assume that that's happening.
We don't really have a person here though that you can call it. Even the clerk can check in.
Yeah.
You have three commissioners that can't all be in the same room together unless certain things happen.
Right.
That's it.
But I think you do have a budget director, which is there is strength in that, having a single point of contact from the budget perspective, and checking with Susan. So
there was a situation that happened over the last 12 months, let's say, a couple of different departments, where they had received grant dollars. And they knew in 2024 they were going to receive these grant dollars in 2025. They did not put those grant revenues into their budget. They received the dollars then in 2025. It had to come to the board because we're the ones who signed the warrants, right? We're the ones who write the checks. Came to the board and we're like, well, we don't know anything about this. The departments are like, well, because it was a grant, it didn't come to our normal revenues. Our issue was maybe this initial purchase isn't a board thing, but everything that was being asked, if there's going to be M&O associated with it over time. There's going to be expectations that the citizens of Island County are going to be paying for maintaining this over time. And I felt very, very frustrated about this. Do all revenues need to come through the budget, Eric?
I would say that if there is an expenditure made by the county, there should be a corresponding revenue source to go with the corresponding expenditure. So that grant funds during your quarterly amendment update should be amended into your revenue side, and there should be a corresponding line item for expenditure.
Well, we did have to do a supplemental budget in order to acknowledge that.
Did the board not have to approve that grant?
We didn't have to approve the grant, apparently.
We have to approve it, I think.
Yeah.
It just got decided by...
There was like more than one office.
It got decided because there was a belief of independence, and therefore the action was taken independently, and the revenue came in. And I don't know how it got on the books without going through the board, and the board didn't make the decision, and an expenditure went out. Mm. And I don't understand how that can even happen, to be honest. I also, now I'm talking, so good luck, shut me up. I have some feelings about the fact that that's disrespectful and non-communicative too. It's a single county. It is an Amazon with divisions within it, but it's not like you're running your own Amazon distribution center that's separate from the company. And I don't get that mentality where people are just like, I'm taking money and I'm spending money, and the corporation doesn't need to know.
How would you phrase that for an effective communication to you in this situation is...
I feel a little, you can hear it in my tone, even I feel a little very disrespected in this process. You know, what happens is the board has to talk about all these decisions and choices in public. Others can form coalitions and groups and talk about us behind our back. And while we're doing this wrong and we're doing that wrong, and they're communicating with the public, and they launch what I feel like are attacks sometimes without not having all the information. And where we don't, and we're in public. And then they say, well, you're not being respectful to us. Well, sometimes it is disrespectful to go around about it the way that it's being gone about right now.
So it would be great
if you could come to the table and be a grown up and put your cards on the table the same way we have to put our cards on the table. I want this for my employees. I want this for my department. And it's not always accountability to the public. Respectfully, how it feels to me, I'm not going to speak for my colleagues, is I'm going to make it look like I can't deliver because these people, these commissioners, they're not giving me enough money to perform. I'm not managing my department. It's your fault. I need more resources. I'm not managing my overtime. It's your fault. I don't have enough staff. But they don't sit at the table and say that. We just get this whole vomit of want without any context of how hard it is to try to get money out to the auditor's office, which nobody wants to fund, right? Nobody's like, go auditors. We don't get that pressure, but we have to fund the auditor's office. We want to fund the auditor's office. We need an accountant. Everybody likes paychecks. It is hard sometimes to hear like, well, you're not communicating with us. You're not telling us. You're not. There's a point where you just don't want to get lobbied up anymore. You feel criticized that your team is a bunch of silos that are out for themselves, their department, their people. They want to look good to the public. And we don't have the opportunity to look good for the public because we have to say no in public. We have to cut in public. And we have to say, yeah, you might want a sex crimes prosecutor, but we are going to get an accountant. But what sounds better? And I don't have the luxury of just wanting things and saying, well, I'd be great if I only had this. But it's their fault. That's how I feel about communication. I don't want to do it anymore because it's so one-sided. So, that's it. I'm done communicating.
So what would it look like to be effective for you, though?
That there'd be some shared partnership and understanding of where we are in a budget. A recognition that it doesn't matter if you need more people, if we can't keep a roof over your head, that parking lots need to get repaved, and that's part of it, that there are non-sexy parts of government that need to be funded, and that possibly, just like we don't know how to be experts at what your job is, they give us at least enough respect to know that you don't know how to be experts at what our job is. I would like a little bit of more respect versus attack. And it always comes at the end. And in fairness, last year, I sent an email that said, we are looking at these things. And nobody responded.
In fairness, the email said, it's not a big deal.
We were.
That was the last thing in all caps. It's not a big deal right now. You basically said, don't respond. This is nothing.
The email said, listen in on these meetings.
So, Commissioner,
I don't have unlimited time to go one, two. Don't tell me to calm down, Greg. You just interrupted me. Take responsibility for your own behavior, too. I take responsibility for mine.
You do
one,
not.
I actually do.
No, you don't.
Okay, does anybody want to vote on it?
You got to. This is not productive.
So what we're trying to lay is.
Have me.
So what
you're
really,
go now?
What we're really trying to do.
Two, three,
I've been
four,
through so many bullying sessions. This isn't bullying, but it gets terrible sometimes.
Do you know how
you
hide your emails under I'm the prosecutor? You bully us all the time. You got a group together and said, this is what the rules are, and didn't communicate to the board at all.
Again,
an email, Greg.
Sure, Mr. Johnson, we're trying to...
Talking to my attorney in the same way. Just because my tone is intense does not mean my behavior
because
is the bullshit
behavior. You insulted all of us in your little speech. You said people should grow up and come to meetings. I don't know if you realize how insulting that is to all of these professional adults.
How
we feel like we're grown up. I know how you feel. That's fine. You say how you feel, but what you said was an insult to everyone around this
table.
You
can choose to be insulted or not if it applies to you.
I felt
these are my feelings about how I feel when we are communicating, and this is what happens to the board all the time. You text each other, you have group meetings without us, and then you attack us behind the scenes when we're trying to get a budget out the door. And then when we try to say how we feel, you say you're being a bully. Your problem, Greg, is you're not a county commissioner.
This meeting, I'm about to recess this meeting, which is ridiculous.
What?
So, Jill, really.
It's not
please.
It's me. Sometimes I'm just the person who says the truth. I get that it's my tone. But why is it so hard to have a conversation about the truth in this place?
Because you don't have conversations. You insult people.
What is he doing right now?
You convince everyone that your view is the only way. I've tried to get on board agendas. I submit agendas, and then I get told the day of my meeting, stricken. Your agenda item was stricken. You know what that communicates? It communicates, we don't want to hear from you about your topic, Greg. I get no notice and no explanation. It's happened to me 3 times. How many elected officials in this state put an agenda item, a legitimate agenda item, on a Board of County Commissioners agenda and are told, we don't want to hear from you? I mean, it's absurd.
And there's been lots of times that you got to get in at the last minute. And sometimes it's
different.
We don't have time and we trust you enough to move it along.
Okay. This argument is
not an argument. It's a conversation.
This is not a conversation, Jill. This is an argument, and it's not moving us forward in our budget conversation. Clearly, we have some communications issues, Eric, that we need to work through. I don't think that we're going to resolve these communication issues in this forum. Is there anything else that you would like us to go forward with?
Well, I think it is looking forward. I mean, clearly there's a history. But what I had hoped we would be talking about is how do we want it in the future? I mean, that is this question. It's how do we want it in the future?
Seats conversations to come to the table so that everybody owns what they're saying behind the scenes to the public. I would like that.
Okay. And I think I actually captured some notes associated a little bit with that, which really were focusing around the opportunity to hear directly from the elected officials and the department heads on a frequent basis. And there is transparency in those conversations. I think that is certainly a valuable desire to have.
And I think I heard the prosecuting attorney say that if the commissioners, cut an agenda item, is this work session items, Greg, that you're referencing?
Yeah.
Kind of work session item, but there needs to be a conversation about that. So to show respect to the elected officials, I heard that one is an issue also.
It's important.
I think I heard something that I think is that works both ways is some grace and respect during the process, that it is a difficult process. It is a challenging process. And so I think that's a very valuable piece, but I think, it will take a little bit more longer conversations, I think, to talk about how do you want it going forward? How do you want the communication component going forward? Are there things that the no surprises, is an email okay versus on the weekly, during the weekly board meeting, there is a weekly budget update so things can be said so that there's an opportunity for two-way communication, just not that one-way email, which can be misinterpreted, it can be misread, it can be misconstrued, and there can be, someone might say something that is, was not meant to be said that way, but it was took that way. So there's different ways. Are there activity bases that we can create that give that opportunity that Susan gives a budget update of where we're at in the process each week, decisions that might have been made, the high level ones that, are not missed, so to speak, so that if you are doing some potential significant change, the board is considering the following. because you don't want necessarily the elected officials sitting through every one of your budget meetings. That's a lot of resources. But can those be captured by Susan and disseminated? So the board is making decisions on non-represented workforce coming up, on what will the cost of living adjustment be for them this year, or what will, you know, we're doing, you know, these are the costs, this is the drivers, these are the things that we're thinking about and considering. Kind of like in union negotiations, do we have tentative agreement in the following areas? You know, so thinking about how do you communicate to the department heads and the elected officials in a systematic way of the things that you are, in fact, thinking about, so that there aren't any surprises at the end. We're thinking about creating that contingency fund for or lumping all county travel into one location. We're thinking about that. We as soon as you start to think about that, we're putting that out there. So there's things that you can be thinking about in that early communication, early and often. Things we've not made a decision on, the things we don't know yet, is just as important to communicate as the things we know. We know we still have decisions to make on the following. So there's those are all things that you can be talking about on a weekly basis to just to make sure that people are listening as well.
So is that something that the electeds and the department heads would value if we added an item to our regular agenda of our Tuesday meetings to talk a budget update in which we would allow you to have, you know, input into that if you wish to do that? I don't know how many of you, I know how many of you pay attention even to our Tuesday meetings. It would mean being involved in that.
For me, it's not necessarily the change last year is an example. It was just different than it had ever been done, right? So it, in that regard, it was like, how is this going to work? And we had no input into that. I didn't feel like it. Again, there was, we all know there wasn't very good communication about that. That's done and gone. But I mean, generally for like my office, it's pretty simple every year, right? So I don't need to have a lot of input into my budget other than what I give you in my narrative, unless I'm, I guess I would say I'm asking for something that you would consider significant that you don't intend on, that I need to sell you on, or that I need to, you need to tell me you're not going to get this.
I think our difficulty this year is going to be, and maybe I have the numbers wrong, Susan, you can tell me if I have the numbers wrong. I believe Susan said at the beginning of our meeting that we are right now anticipating, was it $124 million in revenue and $137 million in expenditures?
Correct.
So we're talking about $13 million difference between revenue and expenditures as of this moment. So probably as we get into, you know, the end of August and into September, we're going to have some challenging conversations. So it might not just be about your general budget, doing your budget the way you always did it. It may end up being, Kelly, that we're talking about bigger things that are more systemic through the organization.
Yeah, and then obviously if it was going to affect my department, I would, or office, I would want to be able to have an opportunity to figure out where those cuts should be made, if they had to be made, et cetera.
And I share a feeling about that too, because I've shared it privately with people. It's not meant to be disrespectful. It's based on past experiences. That what I've had happen as a board member is that when people are asking, well, I want to have a say in where the cuts are, they come to the table and sit in front of the boards and they give us politically impossible cuts. I'm going to protect everything. I'm just going to pick on the sheriff. It was not this sheriff. I'm going to protect everything, but you're going to have to cut deputies. I'm going to protect everything, but I'm going to cut my road crew. I'm going to protect everything, but I'm going to cut the front counter. And then what happens is that the board is left with cut choices presented to them by, in often cases, political people who are trying to survive in political environments like we are also, who are saying, I'm going to give the Board of Commissioners the impossible cut, and then I'm going to protect everything else. And it works great if everybody comes into it with an attitude of, this is what's good for the county. It doesn't work great when people come into it with an attitude of, I'm going to try to keep my department whole by giving people, giving the commissioners a choice that they can't cut on. And that is largely why there's an unwillingness sometimes to let people like, hey, can you figure out where to cut? Because when you get, when we put all of our cards on the table, other people have a chance to play the hand. So at what point are we realizing that we're in a game and we can't play that way?
No, but Jill, when you're already acknowledged that 70%+ of the budget is personnel, that's generally where you have to cut, because everything else is pretty much.
I get that.
At 100%.
But if somebody gives me the choice of saying, I'm going to protect all of my accounting staff, my property staff, my public record staff, my admin staff, my chief deputy staff, but I'm going to cut deputies, right? That's happened in this county before. All the admin staff gets protected, and the level of service piece to the public is what gets cut. So the board takes that option. And then what happens? The deputies protest, right? You're cutting us, and the community's mad. You're cutting us. But that's what the leader of that department gave the board. So when you get politicked up in public, at what point do you think we're going to protect ourselves and say, I'm not going to put that choice out there? Because what I know is the strategy is to protect the most cuttable. I've seen public health do it in the past. We're going to put welcome new baby on the table for cuts. Well, who's going to cut welcome new baby? That's the only program we were given an opportunity to cut. Do you know how many programs there were in there to cut?
That goes both ways. You know,
can you acknowledge your piece before?
We were accused of, you don't like the old people because you're going to cut Meals on Wheels. You don't like kids. You want us to cut HR. The sheriff doesn't like animals and elderly.
Fair.
You know, that happens both ways.
Well, that's what happens when people don't come to the table with an honest, integrity-based conversation about where can we make realistic cuts. But when people come to protect their reputations or their career or grandstand to the public, that doesn't leave us in a good spot because we have to be in public.
So you just framed a really good statement, which was around what would effective communication look like to you. And for you, it's an integrity-based conversation.
Yes.
So that is, I mean, that is a statement to say, and that goes both ways, that you would have that and anyone coming before the board during this conversation of the budget process, it would be integrity based. Now, we would probably need to define that a little bit more because that might mean different things to different people. But it certainly is a statement that when you're having these difficult conversations, because they are going to be difficult, when you start talking about reductions in the level of service, they're going to be difficult conversations. And the expectation is they'll be honest, they'll be integrity-based, they'll be, you know, transparent, whatever terms you want to utilize. And then we measure that at the end of the year. Do people felt that they were that or were they not? And we'll be able to utilize examples to say, that was not, I did not believe that that came within this metric. Because you're trying to create what you want. And then your experience may be different than other people's experience. They might have said, no, I felt every time I was communicated to that there was truth behind it. Other people may not have that. So, I mean, that's what we're trying to get to. I mean, you made a really strong statement of what you had expected in communication. Great. And I think the more we can build on what you want in communication, the more we can then build the kind of the performance metric and the indicators associated with that. Because that was very clear.
Does anyone else have any other things that they want to see us do here in the budget? That any other ideas? Okay.
If we should be putting together a contingency plan for cuts, I guess the sooner we know, the better. Because, I mean, some of us have been through this exercise in 2009, and it was rough.
Yeah. Well, as you know, and we're going to try not to, at last minute, we're going to be trying to find a way not to do that.
But,
which one? Current expense.
To supplement the
12 million.
Revenue?
Current expense.
It's about 12 million. I mean, I don't have it, obviously, I bring my laptop, which I could really speak to it. So the fund balance for current expense is broken up into reserved items, you know, for emergencies, for set-asides, for sheriff vehicles, for example. And then there's the unassigned fund balance. The unassigned fund balance over the last 3 or 4 years has been shrinking due to one-time commitments. So it's looking like, and I'm sorry, I've looked at these numbers over and over again, so, and they shift during the budget process as well. It's about four million, 4 to 5 million. It's in current expense as a fund balance. I apologize if that's wrong, because it's not.
I just want to make sure everyone's on the same page as you stipulated. The 137 and the 124 is all budgets, all funds.
All funds.
So current expense fund balance is kind of unrelated, but a part of that picture. So, you know, the public works budget is in there's a whole bunch of budgets and funds that are in that larger picture.
I don't think at this stage that we're looking at cutting. I think what we're looking at is getting as close to a maintenance budget as we can, and we should have fund balance that will give us enough notice that we can start being strategic. That's what that fund balance has been for, is so that we could make strategic changes over a longer period of time and not rushed ones in the budget. I don't, at least from our initial conversations, they have not been, we're cutting things. What we're not going to be able to do is lean into new initiatives or increase things the way that we were hoping. That's for sure off the table. I think it's really just stabilizing where we're at. And then if there are things that are, we know we can cut, or there's funding changes, we're not gonna be able to go back in and stabilize those grant funded positions. For example, if the grant's gone, the person's gone. We know that's kind of where we're at. But I don't know when we're at the end of the budget, if 2026 isn't a year that we start that conversation about what 2027 looks like.
I'm really worried about the public defense and the impact that's going to have on our budget.
About what?
Public defense.
Oh, okay.
Because we were having to take on all of that additional, huge, huge additional expense, because public defenders now have to limit their caseload, and so we have to find more public defenders, and we have to pay for all these
three times as many.
And there's no state productivity.
And it's one of those unfunded mandates that they talk.
Supreme Court doesn't have a budget; they just pass rules.
Yeah,
that's $1 million right there.
So that's in there too, and it's a big one.
Ooh, did I say that out loud on the record?
Okay. Anything else, you guys?
It's a 10-year process.
Oh yeah. Thank you.
Thank you
so much, Eric. This has been such a really, really important conversation, I think. I'm very, very grateful that you came and that you joined us here today.
And if anyone has any questions or might get a hold of me, please don't hesitate to do so. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Eric. Thanks a lot.